The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Hello and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez, and my dear friend and co-host, Christy Matthews, is not here to join me right now like she usually is. I am in the San Francisco Bay Area, and this show is interviewing Miss Maria Chang of Professional Makeup Artistry here in the Bay Area. Christy was unable to join us for the interview. When I was coming to San Francisco, after I booked my ticket, I knew that there were a few very important wedding professionals that I wanted to interview for the show. And so I contacted Maria right away because she really is just amazing at what she does. And she has always impressed me. In fact, if you follow her on Instagram or Facebook or Pinterest, you're going to be blown away. And Maria and I worked together several times many years ago. And like I said, she was amazing. But I never really got to know Maria on a personal level. And so when I invited her here to talk to me and record for the show, I had no idea what her story was. I think you're going to find it fascinating, inspiring, because I certainly did, especially right now with what's going on in our country. It is so relevant. Her story is of how she came to this country and how she killed it. I mean, she worked her ass off, and she is truly an inspiration. So the first half of this show is really her story, and I hope you enjoy it, and I hope you're inspired by it. And trust me, midway through, she's going to get into, you know, wedding info and inspiration for your wedding. But yeah, just listen and enjoy, and let us know if you have any questions or comments. Thanks so much. Without further ado, here we go. So we're drinking beers, by the way. We're not drinking wine. So let's cheers.
Okay.
We didn't even cheers earlier.
Cheers, big years.
Cheers. How is that, by the way? Is it too IPA-y for
no,
you?
No, actually, it's pretty good.
Okay, good. Let's start out by just touching on where you're from, because as you might hear there, Maria has an accent.
Yeah.
Barely noticeable.
Well, I'm from Nicaragua. I was born there, mm-hmm. and came here when I was 11 years old. I never lost the accent. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm starting to wonder if it's a speech impediment instead of an accent, but either way, it's me.
It's an accent. Yeah. It's you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I came from Nicaragua as a refugee. Mm-hmm. And just started the American dream since I got here, because as a refugee family, we had to work from day one. Mm-hmm. So, and I haven't stopped ever since. So still dreaming, still creating. It's just amazing to be living in this country. It's something that I don't take for granted every day. I remind myself every day of how lucky I am to be here.
Good.
Yeah.
So you were 11, and you have how many brothers and sisters?
I have six sisters.
Six? They're all, you're all girls?
We all girls. No, no brothers.
Oh my!
So as you can see, that has set me up to, you know, on a path to working with women, mm-hmm. which I absolutely love. Mm-hmm. It's my favorite part of my work, is being able to work with women.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And are you oldest, youngest, middle?
I'm the oldest.
You are?
Yes, therefore, I'm very bossy. But I'm very nurturing at the same time.
Yeah.
And in my sisters, I find every archetype of women.
Yeah.
So I kind of learned to, like, deal with every type of client out there. Mm. in, you know, working with women, you have different personalities, and I just love every one of them, and every one of them represents one of my sisters.
That is so cool. How was it to come here at such a young age? Like, were you excited? Were you scared? Was it quick? I mean, how did that happen?
Well, it's a long story, but a really awesome one, I think. It's part of my story.
Yeah.
My parents, pretty much my mom, which is a badass woman.
Nice.
She's amazing. I mean, she pretty much infiltrated the government and got all the signatures for us to get out and got all the paperwork that we needed. And she was so savvy and so intelligent about it that, you know, because if you got caught in a country, a communist country, trying to get out when you're not supposed to, and there was blockade from the United States, I mean, there wasn't even an embassy in Nicaragua from the United States, and she was able to find a way out of there. Mm. So for us, for me, leaving was one night, you know, knock on our bedroom and my mom saying, we're going on a trip. And pretty much not knowing what was going on.
She didn't tell you what she was
planning? No, because, I mean, we're six little girls. And, you know, she was not going to risk us telling our friends where we're living.
Oh, right.
And then, you know, and in a communist country, neighbors turns against neighbors because they have that kind of like watch over, you know, what other people are doing.
Yeah.
So she couldn't trust anybody. So she pretty much kept it within the very nucleus of the family, just like my grandmother and her brothers and sisters. And we just left one night and never came back.
And your father?
And my father, yeah. Well, my mother said that too. She's like, because it was customary for parents to leave the country and leave their kids, so that it's easier to get out on your own.
And then send for them
or send them money if they couldn't get out. Because a lot of immigrants come here with nothing. They don't have money to bring their whole entire family all at once. They either have to be here in meager conditions and try to make money to send back to their families, or they try to bring them eventually. But my mother said, no way, I'm not leaving my little girls here. And she, you know, said it's all or nothing. Mm-hmm. So we left one night, and we literally left with the clothes on our back. We didn't
Pajamas? I mean, did she get you dressed?
She took like a suitcase, but it was like minimal stuff. And we only had permit to get out of the country to Honduras. Uh-huh. We didn't have visas for Guatemala. We didn't have visas for Mexico. We didn't have, and little by little, by train, by bus, by foot, we just came to the United States.
Maria, what year was this?
This was 1986.
Wow.
Yeah.
You came in the 80s. That's a pretty cool time to come.
Yes. Yes, definitely.
Okay, go ahead.
Especially because we didn't have 80s in Nicaragua.
Right.
Because when, you know, the revolution happened, in the blockage from United States, we couldn't get any 80s culture in Nicaragua.
No music?
No music. What? So in the 80s, we were still listening to the 70s. So a lot of my musical influence is from the 70s, not the 80s,
which is
actually
still great music.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say. Wow.
So yeah, we left our country and traveled for a long time through Honduras, then Guatemala, then Mexico, all the way to the border. And we attempted to cross the border and we got caught by immigration.
From Mexico, US.
From Tijuana.
We got caught.
Yeah.
Were you literally like walking across?
It was pretty scary because we got to Tijuana, and in Tijuana we pretty much wanted to. My parents didn't know what to do, and they tried to find somebody that would cross us over. They called coyotes.
Yeah, Daniel.
Yeah. So they found somebody and they put us in a slump, like a shack of a house, and it had no flooring, it was all dirt, and it was just a shack. And they put us there all day and they say, you gotta stay here all day until nighttime. We didn't have food and we had to keep quiet with six little girls. I mean with five, because one of them was born. Yeah.
Was
born here. One of my sisters was born
really?
Here. Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. So I remember they come got us in the night, and then they told us, you know, to stick together, and then we were going to cross the border, and it was pretty scary. I was 11 years old, and my priority was to make sure that my sisters were not scared. And I tried to keep it light and playful. But it was pretty scary because once you start crossing the border, you have to hide in bushes. You have to avoid, you know, people with guns that you see in the distance, helicopters.
Oh my God.
So one helicopter spotted us and shined the light on us. And my mom at this point is just hugging all of us. One of the coyote guys grabbed one of my sister Nanny, and was running away with her. And I remember looking over and me being 11 years old and just running after the guy, holding on to his belt, you know, in his jeans, grabbing with all my force and my might that I could,
oh my God,
and planting my feet on the ground so I can stop him. Yeah. And I remember he was dragging me by my feet, and I just kept screaming, "He's taking my little sister," in Spanish.
Yeah.
"He's taking my little sister." And the immigration guy, which is huge American, blonde, beautiful guy, came like G.I. Joe and just went after him and grabbed him. And they put us all in a van. You know, they put those
zip ties,
plastic things on us, all of us, including, you know, us little girls.
Little girls.
And when we were driving, we were all crying because we're like, they're going to send us back now. And my parents are going to face jail. Even though I was little, I understood the consequence of being sent back. But the immigration guy stopped the van and he looked back. He goes, "Where are you guys from?" And we said, "Nicaragua." He goes, "This is what you're going to do. As soon as we get there, you're going to claim that you want political asylum."
He told you this in Spanish?
He told us in Spanish everything, how we're supposed to talk to the immigration once we got there. He basically gave us like a little tips or
tutorial
on how to gain political asylum.
Oh, bless
and
him.
And I guess he felt so sorry for us, you know, and what was coming that he...
Because he knew what was going on over there.
Yeah, and I feel like he's one of those angels that... you know, God throws at you in your lifetime. And he was definitely one of those and changed our lives completely. Because once we got there and we say political asylum, they immediately, you know, have to assign you a lawyer and, you know, hear your story and everything. And of course, my mom had a really good story because she had, you know, falsified a lot of papers.
Mm-hmm.
And got political asylum. We got released after being in jail for about a month.
You were in jail for a month?
Yes.
As a child?
Yes.
Your little sisters?
Yes. And actually, it was kind of an oasis. Because traveling from Nicaragua to Mexico, we had to overcome a lot of things. And my mom had to make $5,000 that she had. That's all we had in the world. And made it work for the whole entire trip.
How long was that trip?
It was about a month. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And did you guys sleep in like motels?
We slept in train stations. We slept on the street. We slept on hostels. Yeah, because we couldn't afford like really nice hotels or anything like that.
So actually getting caught was kind of like
it was amazing. They put us in jail in Chula Vista, which is the border of San Diego.
Yeah.
And the people were so nice. That's how I started learning English.
You got food.
We got food.
Room and board.
Yes, exactly. And it was in kind of like jail. It was more like a long hallway with a lot of
cots
and beds. And there were all the women and children were kept together. So we were with all the families too. So it was kind of like...
And your dad got to stay with you?
No, he got to be in the jail with the guys.
Was that bad?
Yeah, because we didn't see him that whole time.
Well, yes, obviously. Yeah. But I meant like, was it not as comfortable for him in the men's side as it was
for you?
I
think so, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like maybe we gotten a better deal because we were children.
Yeah.
And I remember the people at the jails, they were all women where we were. And they were so compassionate and so loving, and anything we needed, like if we needed a pamper or we needed milk, you know, they were more than happy to supply it for us. So when we got caught, it was actually nice. It was nice. We were treated really nicely, and I felt hopeful.
Good.
You know, that we were not going to be sent back. Yeah.
Wow. So you are, this is so relevant to what's happening right now with our country.
I know.
Maria, you must be...
It's hard to watch because I understand the people's fears of people coming into the country and creating harm. But let me tell you, people that are refugees have lost everything. Mm-hmm. And they're the most likely to work really hard and mm-hmm. try to benefit everybody else because they've suffered everything that can be suffered, you yeah. know, like losing everything, losing your family, losing your home. You know, that you've known for so long.
Your friends, everything.
You lose. You got nothing to lose. So when you come here, you are so grateful for any opportunity. Any opportunity, you are so, you don't take it for granted.
Right.
So my message to people is that if you help an immigrant family, I've done that a couple of times with family members. And I even took a family of four in my home for a few years. In order to help them, you know, start a new life. Because sometimes it's those little angels, some people extending a hand that it can make a huge difference. And immigrants are huge innovators because we have to make do with so little that, you know, we have to create our life as it unfolds. And yeah, you become this super believer, enthusiastic, optimistic person mm-hmm. because you know that, and you being with nothing, so you're not afraid of going back to nothing.
Right.
Because even though we left everything, I don't remember being completely unhappy as long as our family was together.
Yeah. You know?
So that's the message for everybody.
And thank God you got to stay together because yeah. so many families don't, like you said, yeah. like the parents yeah. will leave.
Yeah.
Who knows what happens to the children back in that country.
Yeah.
And thank God that this immigration officer
was
so wonderful and helpful to you because he knew what horrible things there were for you to return to.
Yeah.
Wow. I had no idea of this. Okay. this is about weddings still, everyone listening. But wow. Okay. So, all right. So you're in the U.S. Where did you land? After jail.
Yeah, after jail, we were briefly in Los Angeles with an uncle, and then we uh-huh. came straight to San Francisco to live with an aunt.
Okay.
And my aunt, of course, I mean, we were a family of seven.
Yeah.
With my parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were a family of seven, and it was a small two-bedroom apartment. At one point, her landlord found out that she was sheltering a family of seven. And the landlord said, you can't have that many people in the apartment. So in the middle of the night, my aunt said, you guys got to leave or I'm going to lose the apartment. And I remember my cousin drove us to a homeless shelter. And in the homeless shelter, they say...
In San Francisco,
yeah.
Is it still there?
I don't know if that homeless shelter is, but that homeless shelter say, hey, listen, you guys can't be here because you have so many little girls and, you know, we only provide for nighttime. You have to leave during the day.
Uh-huh.
There is another place, Raphael House.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still in place. To this day, I still donate to, and they do a lot of charity work. So what they do is they take in women with families and they help them find jobs and they keep them in there. They usually take only women with children, but again, they feel so bad for us that they also accepted my dad to stay.
Your poor dad.
I know.
Well, yeah. All right.
So we stayed there for almost a year until my mom got a job.
Almost a year?
Almost a year, yes. Almost a year. Also because they also allow us to go to their school, which was a Christian school,
uh-huh.
which was really nice. And I think... at one point I even wanted to become a sister of the Orthodox faith because they did so much for us and I love what they were doing for everybody. And so we stayed there for a year until my mom found a job and my mom was doing cleaning houses and I would be her translator. So we would go and...
So you learned English quickly?
I had to, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned, yeah. And little by little, we, you know, then we got an apartment and little
in
by
San
little
Francisco?
In San Francisco. Yeah.
Wow.
And little by little, we just started living life as an American and working every day.
And you told me earlier when we were talking off mic about your grandmother and
how she raised 8 children mm-hmm. on her own.
Yeah.
Were they all women too? All
girls? No. Boys and
boys,
girls.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phew. That'd be some boys in there. And so you were really close with her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She was, for a long time, I thought she was my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So at what point did she come here?
Well, she didn't come until I was married and things like that.
Uh-huh.
But she didn't like it here and went back to Nicaragua.
She's like, nah, because
she couldn't
me.
Work here. You uh-huh. know, she's 70-something years old and, you know, didn't want to just be hanging around here. She wanted to actually work and, mm-hmm. you know, so she went back.
All right. So you come to this country. You grew up in San Francisco.
Yes. Yeah. In the Mission District.
In the Mission.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You met your husband in San Francisco then?
I did, yes.
You know, your
yes.
not current husband.
Yeah.
He was a husband. And how did you meet him?
Well, he was a friend of my family.
Uh-huh.
So little by little, he, you know, came into our lives and fell in love.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was only 17 when I got married.
You were 17?
I was 17.
Was that legal?
Actually, we had to go to juvenile court.
You did?
Yes, and ask for permission to get married. And I remember the judge saying, why are you here? And we were like, what do you mean? She's like, do you need papers? Mm-hmm. No, I'm a citizen. Are you pregnant? Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, I'm not pregnant. I was so embarrassed. And she's like, well, why are you here? And then we looked at each other. Was like, because we love each other. And she's like, one of those. We don't get one of those when you're this young, okay? And she was happy.
Aww.
Yeah.
So, and then that's where the last name Chang comes from,
yes.
right?
Yes, because my ex-husband is half Chinese, half Nicaraguan.
And your mother worked cleaning houses, and you said in the hotel, working in hotels?
No, we were just cleaning, like, rich people homes.
Rich people's homes.
Yeah,
okay.
In Pacific Heights.
Of course. Wow, what amazing homes.
Yes. And I come from, my grandma was an entrepreneur. She had her own little used clothing store, little stand in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So and there were some times where she would say, whatever you sell today is money for you to keep. Mm-hmm. And so in a way she was teaching me, you know, how to be an entrepreneur too.
Mm-hmm.
And, so yeah, my parents told me that there was no money for college or anything like that. Pretty much I was on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, again, fortunate enough to enter, you know, the educational system here. I went to Mission High.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I decided I wanted to create a club. I was part of the chess club and I was part of the dance club. You know how high schools have clubs?
Yeah.
So there was a dance that I really wanted to go to. And the entrance because dances are expensive, mm. even back then.
Yeah.
And I wanted to get money. I didn't have money. I asked my parents, can I go to this dance? It was $80 ticket back then.
Whoa.
Yeah. And it was a winter ball, and it's a winter wonderland. I really wanted to go. And one of my teachers said, well, the people that head clubs, club presidents, get to go to dances for free. But you have to have a teacher agree to supervise your activities in the club.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. So I decided I wanted to start a fashion club.
Ah.
Because back then, I love everything fashion. I love everything beauty. And it's something that was my interest, my hobbies. I love dance. I love art. I love makeup. I love fashion. And so wanted to start a fashion club. I had one teacher, Mr. Torres, which is Nicaraguan teacher too,
uh-huh.
that I knew sometimes he would say, if you stay after school and help me grade papers, you'll get extra credit. So mm-hmm. I told Mr. Torres, if you sponsor my club, I will grade papers with you every day.
Nice.
So he's like, deal.
Sounds good.
So I started my club and now I'm like, okay, now I have a club. What do I do? So I thought about doing a fashion show right before the dance. And at first it was getting all the girls to bring their own clothes, whatever they were gonna wear to the dance. And a lot of them is like, we don't have clothes. We're going to rent something for the dance. And I didn't know back then because, I bought all my clothes at Goodwill. that, you know, girls that went to dances had to get like these gowns, and like the girls that were, you know, considered to have money, they would buy Jessica McClintock dresses, and, you know, and, but the rest of the girls that didn't, couldn't afford prom dresses or formals would have to go rent in the mission. I found out that there was this place where you, because now I was going to the dance, and now, yeah, what am I going to wear? And I can't afford to buy something, so I got better go check out these dresses that are for rent.
Yeah.
And there was this store called Foxy Lady in the mission. And then, and I, as soon as I enter, Dia spark and say, why don't I tell these people that if I show their inventory before the dance to showcase that what is going to be, what is available for girls to rent, then maybe they'll let me borrow the dresses.
What a great idea.
So my I told my teacher, can you go with me and please, you know, try to convince these people to let me borrow clothes. And I pitched the idea to the lady, the owner of Foxy Lady. And my teacher backed me up. He's like, yeah, I'm responsible. I'm going to, you know, I'll be responsible for the dresses. So they reluctantly let me borrow the dresses. And needless to say, the fashion show that I did for that was a success. Like every girl wanted to go rent these dresses. And the owner of the store say, well, do you want to do another one? You know, and we're going to get more inventory. And would you like, every time they would get a new inventory, then I will showcase the new clothes.
At the school?
At the school, yes.
Like, and like a rally?
Or
like,
yes, because like we will have, you know, once a month or so, you know, there is the announcements that the teachers, you know, want to do. All the different clubs want to present something. Like the dance clubs always had an assembly, you know, or teachers' announcements. Some, there was always an assembly of some sort. So we will present.
Look at you. Yeah. That's so cool.
So that was fun. And then because I never been cliquey, because in Nicaragua, we pretty much everybody's poor and we all wear uniforms. So we don't have that clique idea so much as everybody's in the same boat. Everybody's poor.
Right.
So when I came to the States and saw the cliques, I never was very cliquey. It was always how I felt. I love dance. So I was friends with the cheerleaders. But then I love, you know, history. So I also belong to so-called geeky clubs.
Yeah. The chess club.
The chess club, yeah. And then I was English as a second language, so I had a lot of Asian friends that were learning English or other Latinos as well. Wow. But realized that it was very cliquey, even within the Hispanic community, like Salvadorians didn't speak to Nicaraguans, and I did not understand any of that cliquey division. So I in high school, I was named Social Butterfly because I hopped from clique to clique. And then I love like The Cure.
Yeah.
And all the, so I hang out a lot with the goth kids too. Kids. And I love their style and their, I dress all in black, you know. So when I had my club, everybody was welcome. So my club was, you know, I had it from every club because they were my friends from the different clubs that I invited. And it was very inclusive and it was all kinds of kids. So I love that. And I love producing the entire thing. I never actually model in the fashion shows. I picked the music, did the choreography, did the makeup, did the hair. I produced it. And my satisfaction was sit back and just watch the whole thing unfold. That was the biggest satisfaction. So it, the club was pretty successful. And then my teacher told me, I need to speak with you after school today. There is this career in College of San Mateo called fashion merchandising. Yeah. And he goes, I want to help you get a scholarship for that. And that's what set me in the trajectory that I'm in to this day. This teacher, another angel, that, you know, just extended a hand and help me out. Yeah. I went to college at San Mateo for fashion merchandising. At the same time, he also helped me get, back then, Nordstrom had started a program called the Brass Plant Fashion Board. It was the first of its kind. It was kind of like the precursor to America's Next Top Model. And I remember what Nordstrom did is choose.
Was that to launch their Brass Plant brand?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. So they created the Brass Plant Fashion Board, where they would pick one girl from each high school, and then they would train them in fashion merchandising and everything that has to do with a retail store. Mm. So out of 42 girls that applied in my high school, I was picked.
Wow.
And then that was a huge opportunity for me because I got to work at Nordstrom while going through high school. And in one of those, we had a makeup training, and I just fell in love. Fell in love with that. And after that, I'm like, I don't want, because before that, my goal was to become a fashion buyer. And after that, I'm like, no, I want to be a makeup artist. That was my start. So, well, as life has it, you know, one day I decided, I want to work in cosmetics.
Sorry, I'm going to stop you. All the while you were married to Mr. Chang.
Recently married.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Right, so you're still newlywed.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
By the way, did you have a wedding?
I did not. I had a pretty much a city hall kind of civil ceremony.
You did?
Yes.
Because
I didn't have any money.
You didn't have any money.
Yeah.
But like, was your mom and your dad, they blessed this wedding? Yes, they were happy
about it? Yes, they absolutely love my husband. They still do. Yeah.
Did your mom do anything? Like, what did you wear? Like,
I actually went to Macy's and found a $40 white dress.
Oh, I did that too.
And I, even though it was the 80s, I did not want an 80s dress. I remember my dress was very, do you know Audrey Hepburn in Funny Face? It was a wide bow neck.
Yes.
Very tight at the waist, poofed out like a 50s skirt. It was all lace. And it was T-length. So.
And were your sisters all there?
All immediate family. Even my grandma made
it. Did you go to City Hall?
We went to a chapel close to City Hall. Yeah.
Okay.
That was a reverend. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, of course you go to City Hall to do the civil ceremony. And then we went to a chapel close by.
So our San Francisco City Hall.
Yes. Yes.
You had your way in there. Okay. Yeah. Your ceremony.
Yeah.
Did you have a dinner after?
We did not. Yeah. We did not. So yeah, it was very lucky. Just immediate family.
Well, who'd you couple live with?
Well, at first we got our own apartment.
You did?
Yes.
Good.
But after a couple of years of being married, we decided to move in with my mom so we can save for our first house. I mean, I bought my first home when I was 21.
Good for you, girl. Yeah. Where?
In San Jose.
Wow.
Before the Silicon Valley craze.
Right.
So it was good.
It was cheaper.
Yeah. It was a lot cheaper.
A lot cheaper.
Yeah. So when I was looking actually for a job in cosmetics, I, of course, went to Nordstrom first because they were the ones giving me the opportunity, the training. And they say, you have no experience. And I remember the cosmetic manager taking a liking to me and say, you cannot be hired because you have no experience. You probably need to start like a Montgomery Ward,
Montgomery Ward.
Or you have to start like, you know, JCPenney or something like that. Go over there and see if you can find a job. So I remember going to Stanford Shopping Center and going to all these stores there. And everybody would tell me the same thing. You're not experienced enough. And then I remember getting out of Macy's and being so frustrated, like, how am I going to get experience if nobody's hiring me and
right.
they tell me I need experience?
Right.
So I got out of Macy's feeling so, and then I looked up and I see the store Neiman Marcus, have no idea what it is, and walk in obviously and I say, okay, this is absolutely beautiful store that I can't believe. But I'm like, what do I got to lose? So I went up to this girl, that she's still my friend, Sue, and I said, can I speak to your manager? And she immediately went to get the manager, and I remember it was this really tall lady, Pat, and very intimidating. She looked almost military, and she came out and said, how can I help you? Maybe she thought I had a complaint or something. And I, in my desperation out of what I've told everybody, I didn't even want to sell myself. I'm like, listen, I really, really, really love makeup artistry. I really love cosmetics. If you ask me anything, I can answer anything. just try me for a week. You don't have to pay me. And I just want to work here. She looked at me. She looked me up and down and she goes, can you come to an interview tomorrow? And then I went to a process of 6 interviews with Neiman Marcus. And I didn't know, but the discussion was, okay, there is this girl that has no experience, but I think I want to give her a chance. So finally, when I got the job, it was under the condition that I was on a probation basis, you know, and I stayed in Neiman Marcus for 5 years.
And were you working with every product?
What I love about the Neiman Marcus training program is that they want you to become a beauty expert. They want their makeup artists to be trained in every line. And the cool thing about Neiman Marcus, because they're so high end, that they just didn't send anybody. Sometimes the owners of the companies will come and do our training. So Bobby Brown came and trained us.
No way.
Philippe B came in and trained us. Oh. Laura Mercier came in and trained us.
Oh my God, Maria, that is so cool.
So invaluable. I mean, amazing training.
And they were new back then.
And that's another thing. I feel like I was so fortunate to come in a time where the makeup artist lines were starting.
Yeah.
But Bobby Brown had this vision of global beauty. A lot of my philosophy to this day stem from Bobby Brown's philosophy of natural beauty, realistic beauty. Just don't cover up, you know, superficially. Care about the woman and actually cater to her beauty needs. What is it that, does she want to feel beautiful? Does she just, you know, want a pick me up? Or being realistic about beauty too. And now using it as an accessory versus using it to cover up your personality or cover up insecurities. Get to know the woman behind and then you will be able to service her better.
Wow, I need to go buy some Bobby Brown makeup.
I always say to people, if you need to go to a counter and get a makeover, go to Bobby Brown or Laura Mercier because they've been trained to kind of like enhance your beauty, not really cover up, you know?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was self-conscious about putting makeup on today, by the way. I'm like, oh my God, Maria, Shagan's coming to my house and I don't even know how to put on makeup. I pretend all the time.
Well, I feel like being a makeup artist sometimes is like being a doctor because as soon as people find out I am, they always have makeup questions.
Like, so am I doing this right? Do you put on foundation before you
Yes.
put on? Yeah, I know.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know, but I ask those questions.
So sometimes now I say I'm an artist.
You are an artist. Very much so.
Yes. You know, I love being a makeup artist and I love working with women, but there was something about the retail business I did not like, and it was the corporation side of it. You know, corporations are never a pat in the back. Corporations tell you, okay, that's great, but next year you got to do 20% higher. And I felt no longer like an artist. I felt like a salesperson and didn't like that. So I left and went freelance.
So all of these closed doors, Maria, this is such an important, like, I want to just kind of emphasize that. And there's always these doors that close.
Oh, yeah.
And it takes a person who is motivated or strong to say, okay, that door closed, but I'm going to go to the next one and try to open that one.
Yeah.
Macy's closed the door. Montgomery Ward's closed the door. Like, Nordstrom. And that door that opened for you was, like, amazing.
Yes.
Like, Neiman Marcus. Like, incredible. So like there's a reason for everything, right?
Yeah, and one of philosophy of life for me is that if things are not going your way, you gotta trust that there is a better alternative and there's a better option ahead. You're just not ready to receive it, or you're so eager to go after something that you don't realize that is what's coming to you. And yeah, the theme is not to give up, you know, and to trust. I believe that God knows better than I do of what I want. You know, He knows my heart. Mm. And I think that when things have failed for me is when I get on my own way. You know, when I try to do things on my own without being open, have open eyes and have the perception enough to see the doors opening.
Right.
You know, if you're so deep in your sorrow because things are not going your way, you're not going to see those door opening.
Right.
But if you, you know, you are entitled to feel bad, you know, oh, things are not going my way, be in that moment, but say, okay, now it's over. How can I look around and see another door opening? You know, you gotta have that perception and that ability to kind of let go of what's not working and just find your way to what works.
Open heart, open mind.
Open heart, open mind. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, well, I was disillusioned with retail. I tried entertainment for a while, worked on, you know, a couple of movies, exercise video, a music video.
Really?
And I even traveled with a Spanish rock band. love the entertainment side of the business because it's more artistic. But I found it super superficial. I love because it was super creative, but I felt uncomfortable and uneasy with the idea that I was perpetuating what the fashion and entertainment industry does sometimes, which is making feel women less than, like you're not pretty enough if you don't have this dress, you're not pretty, you're not good enough, you know, unless you have all these things, and creating that perpetuation of the self-image of women. I felt like I was contributed to that, and it was an uneasiness. Even though I love the creative side of it, I didn't like when when somebody would say, you know, that artist needs to be, you know, have bigger boobs, or we need to make her blonde, you know.
Yeah.
So, or when we would have creative direction meetings, and the model was in the meeting, and everybody would talk to her like she was a non-person, you know, like
she's an object,
an object, yeah. And I did not like the objectification of women in the fashion and in entertainment industry. I think it's gotten better; it's more conscious now, but I struggle with that. And then September 11 happened, and, you know, it was kind of like a little wake-up call.
Right.
And then I said, I need to go home, and I decided to have another child. Mm. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom. But after a while, being a stay-at-home mom is just driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. I was so unhappy.
It's so hard.
So out of the blue, a client called from Neiman Marcus. So out of the blue, she said, Maria, I know you don't do weddings, but... you know, I would love for you to do my daughter's wedding. And I'm like, I wasn't doing anything. So I'm like, yes.
What do you mean? Why did she say, no, you don't do weddings? Because you never did them? Like you never
No, I never did
you
weddings.
You didn't want to do them?
No, I didn't know it was enough. Again, back then when I started, most brides went to a salon.
Yeah.
There wasn't this thing as on-location services.
Okay.
So she's like, can you come to the house and get us ready here? And I grab a couple of my friends from Neiman's and say, I have this wedding. They have 9 bridesmaids. I can't do them all by myself.
Whoa.
You guys want to come with me? And then we serviced the wedding. It was 9 bridesmaids. Needless to say, she was happy because I've already done the bride's makeup for her prom and all of that stuff.
You knew her.
Yeah, I knew her. I did their makeup for, they were featured their family for a documentary about venture capitalism in Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh.
And I did their makeup for that. So I already had a relationship with the family. So they were happy. And one of the bridesmaids say, well, I'm getting married in 3 months. Are you available?
There you go.
And I'm like, yes.
There you go.
So I end up doing 7 of those 9 bridesmaids.
You are kidding.
Yes, and that's how PMA started.
Unbelievable.
And then, you know, since I
so you weren't trying to start a business.
No.
You just fell into it.
Into it, exactly.
You were just thrown into, like, oh.
I feel like everything like that is being in my life. I just.
That's another angel.
Yeah, that's another angel. Exactly.
What year was this?
This was 2002.
That's the same year I started my business. Nice. <Yeah.
laughs> We had to be pioneers about everything, right?
Yes.
Yeah, in the way, because weddings are not what they used to be.
No.
No. Weddings now is a production.
It's a huge production.
Yeah.
And so getting a website back then was also very, did you know somebody?
Well, I started calling people, and a website back then, a web designer, because there weren't these templates that you do now.
No.
Everybody had to go through.
You had to know somebody, or you had to pay a shitload of money.
I was quoted $7,000 to do a website.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I don't have $7,000.
Yeah.
So what I did is I got a HTML for dummies.
You did not.
And I did my first website on my own.
Look, Maria!
And back then it was really hard to get photos from photographers.
Because it was all film still.
Exactly.
It took forever. Yeah. And they were backlogged just to get the brides their photos.
Yes. So little by little, I did my website. I did not want to get a salon. I love the idea of going to the client's location because I truly believe it's like, it's her wedding day. Why is she going to be traveling around different places on the morning of her wedding? That doesn't make sense. And to me, it was such a great atmosphere to be in the home of the client or in a place where, you know, everybody, it was in a sterile environment like a salon, that it was not personal. I love the idea of coming in and making it like a slumber party where the ladies are getting ready and for a moment forget that it's their wedding day and just have fun as girls.
Drinking mimosas.
Exactly.
In their childhood bedroom.
Exactly. And I love, it almost gave me a feel of being backstage as something really important. Because I was in the nucleus of the family and the grandma would come in and say something or give the bride the last, you know, words of wisdom, advice. And those things were not going to happen in a salon environment. So I love that human aspect of weddings and realized that that was my place. And for me to be part of it, also as an artist point of view, I am so grateful that our clients allow me this artist lifestyle. I don't take that for granted every day. I am an artist because my clients provide me that lifestyle. So the least I can do is go to their wedding day and give them the best possible wedding day I can possibly be part of or anything that I can help out with on the wedding day. I become like an honorary bridesmaid that day. And it's something that I take very seriously. Yeah.
So let's talk about that because I know you kind of started this business on accident, right?
Yes.
You didn't realize this is what you would be doing.
No.
You started in 2002, yes. So you're on 15 years now.
Yes.
Like me.
Yes.
Yeah. And I know one of the things that you do is you stay.
Yes.
You don't come do the makeup and the hair and say bye-bye, have a nice life.
No.
You stay for the entire wedding day.
Yes. And I've done that from day one. So I learned to do makeup artistry in a very efficient way to save money. But it also taught me that I have to guarantee my work too. Yes. In a fashion shoot, you got to make sure that every photo is perfect. So to me, it was just the thing. Like, I have to stay with the bride because, you know, her photos. Her photos is the product, you know. So if I want to make sure that she looks good in every photo, which is, that's what my job is, to guarantee that she's going to look good in every photo, I need to stay.
Yeah.
Because there's some things I can control. Mm. For example, some clients sweat more than other clients. Some are more oily. Some absorb foundation faster than others. Some, you know, can keep liner on. I can control those things. But I can stay and correct those things. So it didn't make sense for me to just leave, especially a wedding client that are paying a lot of money for you to go and then not guarantee the job for the rest of the day. That did not make sense to me. Another reason that I do it is because we don't advertise. A lot of our clients get published in magazines. So I don't know what the photo editor is going to pick, what photos. It could be a photo from the morning or it could be a photo from the night cutting the cake. Mm. So I noticed from the beginning that a lot of brides look really good at the beginning, but then the more part, the hair is coming undone.
Yeah.
She got no lipstick on. And I wanted that consistency in the photography all the way, because if they were going to do an editorial on that bride, I wanted my work to look good from morning to night.
And as a wedding planner who's there from start to finish, from seeing you or whoever's doing the makeup in the beginning till, you know, we say goodnight and the bride and groom are gone, when every single time when it comes to that cake cutting, Maria, I always have the lipstick. But that's all I can do.
Yes,
okay. I can't fix the eyes. I can't powder you. But I'm going to make sure you have lipstick. So I have appreciated working with you in the past where I'm like, that girl's going to look so good in every single picture. She's fresh.
Yes.
She's fresh.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think it is a personal as a personal mission to be very useful to my bride. So we don't only do hair and makeup. We make sure that we put out any little fire that arises in front of that bride. I'm in constant contact with the planner, with the florist, with the photographer.
So one of the things that Christy and I had did a series on wedding day timelines, wedding day schedules, and we were talking about how very often we'll have a master timeline for everything, When yes. the DJ is supposed to yes. say, when the toasts are, blah, 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 right? But oftentimes, for example, that first wedding you did, there were 9 bridesmaids.
Yes.
Plus probably the mother.
Yes.
And potentially aunts, grandmothers, mother of the groom. And so we will create a separate timeline just for the hair and makeup schedule.
Yes, yes.
Especially if it's like 9 or 10 women and there's like 2-3 hair and makeup artists, you have to like figure it out who gets done first, who gets done second. Typically yes. the bride is the last one.
Yes, yes.
So do you work often with weddings that do not have a day of coordinator or a month of coordinator or a planner?
I do.
Is it a lot, or would you say most of the time
I would say no, because I'm very known in the industry. I work with a lot of planners.
Yeah.
So I would say 90% of my business with a planner.
Mm-hmm. So do you typically create the timeline for the bride for her hair and makeup schedule?
I always do.
Pre-ceremony.
I mm-hmm. always do. Mm-hmm. I actually give them a separate hair and makeup timeline that includes their touch-ups. When I work with our clients, it's very minimal. Because mm-hmm. if they have a planner, my communications is all with the planner.
With the planner. Yep.
Because they're going to know better.
Yeah.
They're gonna. So I take her out as the middleman, because yes. otherwise it's like, well, you take your planner to send me the time, and I just talk directly to the
Absolutely.
Planner, and the planner knows everything. Mm-hmm. They know when the photographer is arriving, so I know that's my go-to person. If there's not a planner, my next go-to person is the photographer,
yeah.
because then the photography to me is the most important. So I need to know where that photographer is gonna be, so I can be there as mm-hmm. well. I put in 8 hours with each client. And
8 hours on the wedding day.
On the wedding day, mm-hmm. yeah. And it's not an option. A lot of clients sometimes call me and say, I really just need you to come in and do hair and makeup.
Was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. And would you give me a discount, or would you charge less? And right. so my answer to that is simple now. Okay, yes, I can come in and do your hair and makeup and leave, but the pricing is the same. Mm. They don't realize that I become a stylist the day of the wedding. I make sure your veil is not crinkled, the bottom of the dress is not folded, you know. Mm-hmm.
You know how to bustle.
I know how to bustle. I know how to take, if the photographer wants the bustle down or bustle up, I can do it really fast. Mm. Veil, no veil, you know. Most of my clients even have 2 looks the day of the wedding mm-hmm. because a lot of...
That is huge.
A lot of my clients were always divided. I noticed that, like, I really want to wear my hair down for my wedding, but my mom says I have to be traditional, and she really wants me to wear my hair up, but I feel so matronly. And I said, well, why don't you do both?
Yeah.
And let's do that.
Both.
Yeah. Right. So make your mom happy, and then you're happy too.
Yeah.
Which one do you want first? Do you want the updo first or the down-do first? You know.
Do you have a lot of people who say, you know, I just hesitate to have you there on the wedding day because I feel like it's going to look like somebody working for me, and it's going to look like this big production, and that's just not me. I'm not like that. You know, I'm very simple. Do you ever get resistance from clients saying, I just don't want people seeing you there?
I don't get it often. I have seen it. I've got that once.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer to that is like, we can be as discreet, mm-hmm. as involved, as you allow us to.
Mm.
So if you need me to be in a room mm-hmm. and just be on call.
And you come to me.
And I come to you mm-hmm. whenever you need me, or you come to me.
Yeah, great.
I'm more than happy to do that. Sometimes we do that with some photographers, because some photographers don't like to have people around.
Yeah.
And I they have this a little bit more discreet way of moving around. Usually the photojournalistic style, they don't want a big entourage.
Right.
Or they just want to take the bride and groom on their own.
Yes.
And with those photographers, because I have a relationship with a lot of photographers, I learn how they work.
Mm-hmm.
And then I know when to be intrusive and when not to.
Right.
Some brides want us to be at by their side mm-hmm. the entire time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they like even tell me at the end of the night, Maria, what am I going to do without you? Don't leave yet. Mm-hmm. You know, can I pay you extra to stay? Because there is a calmness when we're around. And then I know how to put together people in groups for family photos to go faster. I know to take away the beer from the uncle that I just came from cocktail hour.
Yeah.
I know to take the sunglasses off of the heads, you know, to hairspray a little bit on grandpa's toupee so it's not flopping in the wind. And photographers love that they can do their job and I can take care of those little things. So anything that I can be helpful, that's what we're there for. So it's beyond hair and makeup for us.
Yeah.
It's actually creating an atmosphere of calmness and fun. Because to me, it's got to be fun.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. How long do you think it takes on average to do makeup and then hair per person? Well, let's say for the bride.
The bride is 2 hours for sure.
Hair and makeup?
Yes.
Total, 2 hours. So yes. Like an hour each or whatever, however, yeah, depending on the hair.
We can definitely do it in less. Like I can do a makeup in half an hour.
Yeah.
And I can do a hair in half an hour. But it's that rushed feel that I feel like brides should not need to feel like that on their wedding day because it creates an atmosphere of anxiety. And then it carries out throughout the day.
Okay.
Let's go. Instead, I create a 2-hour timeline for the bride. Sometimes they do say, do you really need 2 hours to get me ready? Like, I do my makeup in 5 minutes. Mm. But we say, we want you to have an experience. I want you to be able to take the phone call from your grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to, you know, if your flowers come in, to enjoy them for a second. Get out and look at your flowers. You know, I want if the videographer comes in and says, can I interview you now? You can get off my chair, you know. And yes, of course, have that interview with the videographer. Or if the photographer comes in, I usually have the best light. And they come in and they're like, oh my God, you set this up on the best light. And they want to start taking photos immediately. And sometimes that delays me a little bit. So if I leave a 2-hour timeline, it's a relaxing timeline for the bride. And that sets the tone for the rest of the day. They need to go to the bathroom sometimes. I make them drink a lot of water. So they go to the bathroom more often, you know. Mm-hmm. I want them to eat. So if they have time to eat while they're in my chair, most definitely. I like to have a very relaxed timeline. It's good for everybody, including myself. Mm-hmm. Everybody says the day of the wedding goes super fast. So if you can prolong, you know, something that is fun, like getting ready with your girls, because everything else is, you know, after that is one event after the other, then I love to set that atmosphere. I'm the first vendor to arrive, and I like to make it seem like it's a party, and we're just getting ready for a party, which is the truth.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I can't tell you, Maria, and those who are listening, I can't stress enough how important that is, because that day that you've been preparing for like a whole freaking year.
Yes.
Sometimes more, sometimes less. It's going to go by so fast. And the biggest thing for me, which it sounds like for you as well,
yeah,
is that those two people getting married are actually experiencing it.
Yes.
And not flying through it. And you're right. Those 2 hours, they might not all just be putting on makeup on you or doing your hair. They are you really treasuring these moments, these last moments before you're on in front of everybody.
And I keep reminding them throughout the day too, because, you know, sometimes brides get caught up on the details. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not set up yet. You know, or and it's like, you have the best planner.
Yeah.
It's going to be set up. They have their own timeline where things need to, maybe the cake is now because it's too hot,
mm-hmm,
you know.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it. So I keep reminding them through the day. Oh, I remind them to breathe. Mm-hmm. I remind them to enjoy something. Or I point out something that is so beautiful in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Because, it's a lot of detail in one day.
Yes.
It's a lot of logistics.
Yeah.
A lot of people you have to deal. It could get stressful if you don't let go.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why you hire the best vendors. Because if you have vendors that do care about you, they're going to allow you to let go.
Yes.
And that's one of my jobs. Again, I have the fortune to being with the bride all day long next to her and remind her how lucky she is and how fortunate she is to be able to have that celebration, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a thankless job sometimes. You know, sometimes, you know, people say, well, you're just planning a party. What's the big deal? But what people don't realize that it's a thankless job is, you know, women generally want to invite their friends and family so everybody has a great time. Sometimes it's not even for them. It's they want to give out the best party they can.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I hate when people call brides bridezillas, or it's like there's no bridezillas. Mm. It's just people not doing their job, making her upset, you know. But if everybody did their job, we have a calm bride. And that's by being my experience, you know, that I'm so fortunate to belong to a group of vendors in the Bay Area that we have the same thing in common, is giving our clients the best day of their life and create a wonderful relationship. And it's been great. I mean, to me, weddings are not stressful.
Hmm.
At all.
They're amazing.
Yeah.
They're so fun.
Yeah. Especially if you work with the right vendors.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we become a team.
And Maria, have you done any same-sex weddings?
I have. Yes. Yeah? Especially here in the Bay Area. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. I haven't done two guys yet.
Okay. So you've but done I've lesbian done, weddings.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I've done two girls. Uh-huh. Yes. And it's double the fun.
Yeah. Have you... I remember doing a wedding once where it was... straight couple, you know, but the groom was very aware of the fact that he had oily skin and he needed to be touched up throughout the day as well. Have you done that?
We do that with everybody. Yeah. Like I said, if there's grandpa toupees flying in the, I mean, I even carry toupee tape for that reason. Because these are your family photos, and the people that are going to be in the family photos need to look just as good.
So you're not just on the bride. You're looking at everybody in those photos, yes, and you're
so
helping them
grooms,
out.
Grooms, if there's a pimple to cover up, we've done that. Mm. If it's oiliness, we carry anti-shine for the groom. Mm-hmm. But not only for the bridesmaids and the groomsmen, too. Whoever's in the photo. I always take a look who's in the photo.
Yeah.
If I take away the purses from the ladies, because grandmas carry, like, big purses, I take them away from them. From the photos, anybody that is in that photo, I make sure that they're like perfect.
Yeah.
Because these are the photos that are going in grandma's mantle and the family. Yeah.
Family heirloom.
Exactly. Yeah.
And what do you use any products specifically, or do you use all sorts of products?
I use all sorts of products. Okay. I'm not brand loyal.
Mm-hmm.
I have favorite products.
Okay.
So, I mean, we use from every brand, really. Everything from drugstore to really high end.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for me, it's more important that the product works than the cost of the product. You know, if it works, it goes in the box. If it doesn't work, it gets tossed out.
Good.
So basically, that's what I do. I test everything that comes out in the market. And if it's good, you know, it goes in the box. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Okay. And Maria, I want you to tell everyone out there how they can find you. I mean, obviously we said your website, and you can repeat that, but you have an amazing Instagram account. You're on Pinterest. Give it all. Just throw it out.
Yes. Well, if you know, Google professional makeup artistry, we're the first one to come out. If to find us on Instagram is PMA Style. And Facebook is also professional makeup artistry. But there's link in our website to all of those social media. So just go to pmastyle.com and you will find the link to all our social media, including our Yelp reviews. We have amazing reviews. And I anytime I feel any doubt, or anytime I feel like down or like the pressure is getting to me, I just go read those Yelp reviews on professional makeup artistry, and it reminds me and it makes me feel grateful that of the clients that we have. And I do feel like I'm making a difference in women's life just by reading those reviews.
You are.
Yeah.
You are. Awesome. Thank you so much, Maria. I appreciate
Thank you.
It. This has been fun.
This has been awesome.
I think we have to have another beer. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening. As always, we appreciate it. And if you have any questions for us or for Maria, maybe she'll send some answers. You can also tweet us at TBWP Podcast or shoot us an email, thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook is also at TBWP Podcast. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.